The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Ireland's standing within the EU has transformed since we joined in 1972. However, the political landscape dramatically changed within that period. From Brexit to the war in Ukraine to tariffs, issues facing the European Union are far greater than before, and Ireland now needs to take a bigger stake in the EU's future. So for a small country which plays a big part in the economic bloc, is it time that we stepped up again to take our proper role? Well, one person who believes Ireland needs to get its act together is Gerard Howland, former government advisor and columnist to the Irish Times and other places. Gerard, good morning and welcome.
Pat, good morning.
Now, talk to me about how we were, because as one of the earlier members of the EU, we managed to get a lot of people in key places.
Yes, and we three, who are Britain and Denmark and Ireland, who joined in 1972, I mean, we've had a marvellous 50-odd years in the European Union. It's been economically very successful. It's been politically hugely successful, because up to the early 70s, and the Troubles had just begun then, our whole world was mediated through London. But because we joined the then EC, now EU, we had another platform. And that enlarged us politically immensely. And you could trace a dotted line from there through to the Good Friday Agreement and beyond. It's nearly half the life of the entire state. It's more than half the life of all of us who are living in the state now. So it's a norm to which we are immensely used. But everything has changed, and what served us well will not serve us again going forward.
Okay, now I mentioned some of the things that have changed. Brexit obviously changed. How does that impact our role in Europe and our standing in Europe? Did we always stand kind of cheek by jowl with Britain on most policies?
Yes, the big thing about Brexit is not that Britain left. That was very important. It's that we are left behind after they have gone. Our biggest best friend is gone. The centre of gravity of the EU has gone to the continent, to the bigger continental countries, at precisely the time that the world has completely changed and the EU has changed with it.
Now, we are isolated geographically from the EU. We were joined. We are no longer joined directly to them, because we had Britain in between. They were in the EU. We were all kind of one happy family. Has that geographical isolation impacted us?
Yes, and I suppose we had a marvellously successful defence policy for 100 years based on the fact that nobody was remotely interested in us. and we had nothing much to be interested in. But now our seas are absolutely populated with all sorts of wires that are connecting the global economy, global communications. We are an object of considerable interest on the western flank of Europe.
So who
by
is
the
asleep?
Russians and others.
Who was asleep in the wheelhouse?
So we were asleep. And it's not that we could have predicted the world that has emerged in the last 4 or 5 years. That's poppycock. But we didn't do the basics in terms of providing some defence capability. So it's not just that we're starting from behind. We're starting from so far back, we won't be at a basic level for many years to come, even with increased investment. But that's only one issue. Another issue is that because the EU has changed because of Ukraine, particularly the Baltic countries, the Nordics, they are completely focused on security as their preeminent issue.
We are a neutral country. So the difficulty of deciding that we need more complex arrangements with different countries to give us the kind of security that we cannot, well, we can afford it, but we can't build it quickly.
We can't build it quickly. Neutrality, whatever that means, and we've never been very clear about that among ourselves, let alone with others, by the way, is going to be politically very tricky. And it also comes because of tariffs and because of Trump's, with the need to rapidly progress trade deals with the rest of the world, CISA with Canada, Mercosur with Latin America. India is not far down the road.
Indonesia, and do you think we are unwilling to make the various sacrifices that are required of different sectors to sign those deals?
So certain sectors are. Yeah. Because even though they're massively beneficial to Ireland as a whole, subsections of the economy have issues. And in our multi-seat constituency system, small groups can hold the country up. And unbelievably, Pat, in this programme for government, the government parties wrote in a commitment that they would not support the current version of the Mercosur deal. Now, why would you get up on that fence to be knocked off it? The stupidity of that is simply incredible.
So how do we get back to the centre of EU affairs? I mean, we know how Britain has fared. Mm. They've got themselves out and they've kind of cut various deals in the last while in terms of, you know, access to the EU by their travellers, their tourists and so on, which many people feel they shouldn't have got because don't they deserve the punishment having had the temerity to leave the EU? But how has Denmark fared?
So if you just stick with Britain just for one sentence, right? Britain's achievements can be simply summed up by saying that under its current government it has managed to get close to the least worst that's available in an overwhelmingly negative situation. It's not a positive achievement. It's a least worst achievement. And fair play to them, by the way, because contextually, it is something that, you know...
But also that they are suffering mightily from the Brexit effect.
Of course.
I mean, it was anticipated by the no side, but the yes to Brexit side denied all downsides.
Yes, and Brexit is a big negative for Britain interminably. But you mentioned Denmark. I mean, Denmark was very out of sorts with the European Union for years. They didn't join the euro. They had every derogation going. Their politics was quite cantankerous with Brussels. And what happened in Denmark was, led by the government, led by wide sections of political parties, this is not working for us. To be effective, we need to be closer to the centre. And because they invested heavily politically in the parliament, in the parliamentary committees, so if Denmark is voting on the price of cabbage in Brussels next week, that's discussed in the parliamentary committee in the Danish parliament beforehand. So there's a level of engagement in Denmark with all of these issues that is unknown here.
You believe our MEPs just vanish off to Brussels?
No, I'm talking about in their national parliament. So committees in the national parliament in Denmark routinely discuss in advance issues that are forthcoming for votes in Brussels across the board. So in the national parliament, there's a level of engagement.
Okay, but what happens in our situation? Our MEPs go off and they vote as their political parties and the groups to which they belong vote, by and large. I presume they're whipped into
life. Well, historically, and we're talking very recent here, history here spectacularly, the Fianna Fáil MEPs did not vote for Ursula von der Leyen, contrary to the view of the political party that were in Brussels, and that was a significant political cost to Ireland. You know, she is a force to be reckoned with. She did not come here, for example, to campaign during the recent European elections because she believed she would be in for a bit of a hiding. We have lost ground with the centre in Brussels. We had several influential MEPs, if I could single out in a very positive way, three people in particular. So Mairead McGuinness was a player in the Parliament. She left to go to the Commission. We sent a very good MEP to Brussels called Brian Hayes. He clearly had substance and was going places. He left after one term. We sent another very good MEP out, Frances Fitzgerald. She clearly had capacity and stature. She left after one term. We have some good MEPs out there, but in the EEP, and now we have finally an aide on our Reardon. We, after many, many years, we have a representative in the Socialist group. But are we playing in the Parliament at the level, in the committees, in the groups that we did historically? The answer is no.
And how do you get there? Because you
tenure. Tenure and capacity. You need to send
seniority
and bright people who stay around a long time.
Now, you talk about the way we got involved in the US-EU tariff arrangements and how we used a megaphone to advocate our individual national interests. Mm. And you refer to that as digital blathering.
It was digital blathering because you mightn't believe this, but you know, they have access to the Twitter machine in Washington, D.C. They can see it. And what Brussels and von der Leyen was trying to do was toughen up the EU position to have the maximum leverage against Trump and Washington. As she was trying to toughen up the EU position, several countries, of which Ireland was especially conspicuous, were saying, of course we want a unified line, but here's a list of stuff we don't want in the mix because it doesn't suit us. And we weren't saying that quietly in the corridor. We were putting it up repeatedly.
So that was on for social home consumption, media, wasn't it?
Precisely. And it was really stupid because it doesn't get any political dividend at home. Because now we have the result, we know what's going down. So the idea that there was a political dividend to be had at it is blathering, is just inconceivable. But it damaged us in Brussels, and it undermined, with others, we weren't the only ones at this, by the way, the European Commission in our dealings with the Americans.
So how do we get back to, shall we say, an important position in Brussels?
So we need to do a couple of things. In the very short term, and I mean in the next few months, we have the presidency of the EU with the second half of 2026. We need to up our game for that. We need to realise that we do need to do Mercosur and the Canadian trade deal ASAP. And the sooner the government grasps the nettle on that, the better. Moving on from that, then, I think there has to be a recognition that in the European institutions, not just the parliament, but in the bureaucracies, we're no longer sending the people there who stay and rise to the top. So Paddy and Bridie are not as prominent, are not as populous in those critical institutions as they were historically.
I mean, when we think of, you mentioned Mairead McGuinness, Pat Cox,
yes,
again became a senior
and,
vice president.
And lots of people whose names we don't know, they are known, I should say, but they were in the bureaucracies. And it's soft power. They were never working for us. But nonetheless, it was a soft networking thing that was to our advantage, to have people who knew Ireland very well at those senior levels. I'm thinking of Catherine Day, who was the most senior official in the European Union. We don't have people at that level anymore. And that will take years and years to recover. But it needs to be done very systematically to support very bright people getting those exams, getting into those institutions and being supported on their way up.
A couple of questions coming in. Why does coming into line within the EU always involve us militarising, never the EU demilitarisation? That's from David.
It's a very good question, and I suggest that he puts that in an envelope and sends it to the Kremlin, to Mr. Putin.
You ask how the perception of Ireland has changed in the EU. I have relatives from Germany, and they tell me that Ireland is viewed as being anti-Semitic by many in Germany. I've argued that this is a total misrepresentation of who we are, but it's a view that persists. That's from Jack.
Yes, that is a view that exists. And there is a growth in anti-Semitism here. I don't think it's fair to say that Ireland is anti-Semitic. I think that is, in fact, grossly unfair. But is there an issue with anti-Semitism in Ireland that is underappreciated? The answer is categorically yes. Are we, our politics, when we speak about Gaza, are we insensitive to Judaism, to Jewish people, who are not the same as Israel? Do we differentiate clearly? No, we don't. Have we mixed the two up together in ways that are prejudicial? Categorically, we
but
have.
But isn't it often the case, certainly on this program we talk about, you can be anti the current Israeli government and not be anti-Jewish?
You most certainly can, Pat. I totally agree.
Yeah.
But when you're
criticizing the Israelis who turn it back on us and say, oh, you criticised us, therefore you're anti-Semitic, when in fact you're saying, no, we are criticising the current Israeli administration for its cruelty.
So let's just talk about the Irish and then get on to the Israelis. When the Irish are criticising Israel, they do not always carefully, properly differentiate between Israel and Jews. They are quite distinct. In relation to the Israelis, I don't admire or like their government. I think the Israeli government is damaging the state of Israel. Have they unfairly characterised us as anti-Semitic for purely political reasons? Yes, they have.
Gerard Hallin, a former government advisor and a columnist. Gerard, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.